This was an armed insurrection. They weren't looking to uphold the will of the people. They were looking to deny the will of the people.
Marking 1 year since the Capitol riots in Washington. It's Friday, January 7th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Jessica Stone in Washington. You'll also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Australia's COVID policy keeps defending tennis champion off the court. Introduction to the protesters accused of attacking the U.S. Capitol. State of emergency in Kazakhstan. Australia's premier limits free COVID-19 tests. Why India won't greenlight Merck's new COVID-19 pill. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The first anniversary of the January 6th Capitol riots was remembered in Washington Thursday, beginning with remarks by U.S. President Joe Biden.
They weren't looking to uphold the will of the people. They were looking to deny the will of the people. They weren't looking to uphold a free and fair election. They were looking to overturn one. They weren't looking to save the cause of America. They were looking to subvert the Constitution. And here's the truth. The former president of the United States of America has created and spread a web of lies about the 2020 election. He's done so because he values power over principle, because he sees his own interest as more important than his country's interest, than America's interest.
President Trump responded by statement less than an hour later, saying, quote, "The Democrats want to own this day of January 6th so they can stoke fears and divide America. I say let them have it because America sees through their lies and polarizations," end quote. Members of the House held a period of prayer and silence on Thursday afternoon to remember the 140 Capitol Hill police officers who suffered injuries in the melee. Four police officers involved on duty that day later died by suicide. Members of Congress also shared memories of the attempt by protesters to take over the Capitol. Colorado Democratic Party Congressman Jason Crow.
And I looked back down and saw the police starting to build barricades and take furniture, anything they could find, and barricade the doors. And it was at that moment where I realized that we were trapped, that we weren't getting out. So many of us went through the analysis of what are we going to do next? How are we going to get out? Are we going to have to make a stand there? Are we going to have to fight our way out? So the first thing I did was called my wife and talked to her told the family that I loved them and for her to tell the kids that as well. Then hung up the phone and immediately got into Ranger mode, as I said, and as I said before, and just created a mental checklist of everything that I thought we could do to increase our chances of getting out and everything that we needed to prepare ourselves for.
Roughly three dozen lawmakers were evacuated safely, along with reporters and staff who were trapped with them. Former President Donald Trump continues to insist that the 2020 vote was rigged. In recent months, the former president has pushed Republicans in state legislatures to change election laws. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell reports.
The few thousand protesters who ended up entering the Capitol that January day sought out lawmakers, in particular House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and former Vice President Mike Pence, as they attempted to formalize Joe Biden's victory over Donald Trump in the November 2020 presidential election. The mob erected gallows, assaulted police and journalists, vandalized, and looted offices. The violence and chaos left five people dead, wounded 138 police officers, resulted in charges against more than 720 participants, and landed Trump a last-minute impeachment, his second, just days before he left office. Trump maintains the poll was rigged in the face of overwhelming evidence that there was no election fraud, as do some of his supporters, who continue to attend his post-presidential rallies.
I'm here to see our rightful president that actually won this election, and I just want to hear what he has to say.
Trump was planning to address his followers again January 6th, but he canceled the event and says he'll instead address his followers at a rally planned for January 15th in Arizona. Observers say he's been busy all year trying to influence sympathetic lawmakers. Jeremy Suri, a professor of history at the University of Texas at Austin, via Skype.
So he's trying to limit voting access in states that have diverse populations or ever more diverse populations like Georgia and Texas. He's trying to get people like Jim Jordan and Marjorie Taylor Greene, two members of Congress, to get them more of their own kind of people elected who will do things such as pursue policies designed to keep immigrants out of the United States, policies designed to take the United States out of its international alliances like the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. So he has an American America First agenda. He has an ego agenda, and he has an agenda about trying to rewrite history to match his false narrative, and he's pursuing that every day.
If anything, says analyst Suzanne Spaulding, who leads the Defending Democratic Institutions Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, this galvanizing event has only further divided the United States politically. Republicans who spoke out against Trump right after January 6th seem to have gone silent in the past year. More troubling, she said, polls show that 1 in 3 Americans believes violence against the government is justified. This seems to have given Trump fuel.
I suspect in that sense he has felt emboldened. I think there was, again, in the very first hours after that, those events, a sense among some of the Republican members of Congress that perhaps this had he had gone too far, and that they thought they had some breathing room to distance themselves. And unfortunately, what seems to have happened is that he has not lost his grip on the Republican Party.
But he will continue to bring up Trump's responsibility, says White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
I don't think we've held back on this front. I mean, President Trump's role in subverting our Constitution, attempting to block the peaceful transfer of power, and defending a mob that attacked our Capitol and law enforcement has been well documented. And it's something, obviously, the president spoke about in terms of that being one of the worst days in our democracy.
Trump will likely reference Biden's words during the January 15th rally. But Spaulding says the American people, not politicians, deserve the last word here.
I'm always struck by our national anthem, the words that we sing at ballparks and sport arenas all around the country. That starts with a question and ends with a question. It starts with the question of, is the flag still flying? We saw it through the night, through the battle, but now it's the morning. And the question is, does that flag still wave over the land of the free and the home of the brave? That's how it ends, with a question mark. And all of us must be part of making sure that that answer every day is yes.
So, a year later, which flag is it going to be? Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream, at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Why is China renaming disputed locations around Asia? Experts see North Korea shunning nuclear talks as economic crisis grows deeper. Vietnamese critics slam journalist's 9-year sentence. Map helps Chinese man reunite with his family after decades. Martial law victims in the Philippines challenge Marcos's presidential bid. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. World tennis number one Novak Djokovic has had his visa canceled by Australian authorities and is facing deportation. He had received a COVID-19 vaccine exemption to defend his title at the Australian Open, but has reportedly failed to provide proper evidence to border officials. From Sydney, VOA's Phil Mercer reports.
Serbian Novak Djokovic is the defending Australian Open champion and a 9-time winner of the event, but the government said Thursday he's no longer welcome. The world number one was detained at Melbourne Airport on Wednesday for several hours before Border Force officials announced that he'd not met immigration regulations and would be deported. Djokovic's father had claimed his son was being held captive. Serbian President Aleksandar Vučić said he was a victim of harassment. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison is standing firm, though.
On the issue of Mr. Djokovic, rules are rules. And there are no special cases. That's the policy of the government and has been our government's strong border protection policies, and particularly in relation to the pandemic, that has ensured that Australia has one of the lowest death rates from COVID anywhere in the world. Entry with a visa requires double vaccination or a medical exemption. I'm advised that such an exemption was not in place, and as a result, he is subject to the same rule as anyone else.
With his visa revoked, Djokovic is now an unlawful non-citizen in Australia and is being held in immigration detention, where his movements are restricted after he was driven from Melbourne Airport by government officials. It's also unclear whether Djokovic is allowed to communicate with his advisers, which is standard practice according to Australian law. His lawyers are challenging the deportation order in Australia's Federal Circuit Court. The 34-year-old tennis star hasn't publicly confirmed his COVID-19 vaccination status. He flew to Australia after being granted a controversial medical exemption. Tennis authorities said he'd not received any special treatment, but many Australians who've lived under some of the world's toughest coronavirus restrictions believe Djokovic had abused the system. Australia states and territories Thursday reported more than 70,000 new COVID-19 cases. A total of 612,000 infections have been diagnosed in Australia since the pandemic began, according to official figures. 2,289 people have died. More than 90% of the eligible population have been fully vaccinated. To curb the spread of the virus, the Northern Territory imposed lockdown restrictions Thursday on unvaccinated residents, who must adhere to stay-at-home orders until next Monday. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, meeting the protesters from the January 6th Capitol attack. Happening now in Asia. Thousands of passengers are being held on Royal Caribbean's Spectrum of the Seas ship in Hong Kong for coronavirus testing. That's after health authorities said 9 passengers were linked to a recent Omicron cluster and ordered the ship to turn back. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. So happy you've joined us here on VOA Asia. More than 725 people have been arrested since last year's January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol that was aimed at overturning Joe Biden's presidential election victory. One year later, some of the rioters who've been sentenced for a variety of crimes are speaking out about that day and their actions. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti has our story.
Of the thousands of supporters of former President Trump who stormed the Capitol, more than 725 have been arrested and charged with crimes. Floridian Robert Scott Palmer received the stiffest sentence yet, more than 5 years for assaulting a police officer with a dangerous weapon. Palmer was seen in video spraying officers with a fire extinguisher, then throwing the canister at police. VOA was scheduled to interview Palmer, but he is in jail in quarantine after catching COVID. In a letter to the judge before sentencing, Palmer blamed former President Donald Trump and his advisors, writing, "They kept spitting out the false narrative about a stolen election and how it was our duty to stand up to tyranny." Another Capitol rioter from Florida, Felipe Marquez, says fake stories about human trafficking led him to join the uprising and to invade a senator's office. Marquez pleaded guilty to disorderly conduct in a restricted building and received 18 months probation. He told VOA in an email, "I would like to leave this in my past as a mistake.
I was trying to get more known for conservative content and getting views on YouTube, but and the way the events of that day folded were terrible."
Name, gender, state.
John Lewis, with George Washington University's program on extremism, is tracking each case of those who stormed the Capitol.
You have defendants from 18 to 80 years old. You have individuals from every walk of life, from a salon owner to other business owners to firemen to law enforcement to military.
More than 80% were charged based on evidence gathered from social media posts, often their own. Like Texan Jennifer Ryan, who gained notoriety after tweeting a photo in front of a broken window at the Capitol, along with a tweet that read, "We just stormed the Capitol. It was one of the best days of my life." Ryan later tweeted that she was not going to jail because she is blonde and white. Here's what she said as she left the courthouse after pleading guilty to demonstrating inside the Capitol and receiving a 60-day sentence.
"I walked into the Capitol for 2 minutes and I'm remorseful of that."
Ryan claimed her tweets, not her actions at the Capitol, got her into trouble.
I regret ever tweeting, but, you know, it's a free country.
Some of those charged, like Yvonne St. Cyr, are unrepentant.
I own what I do, but I still believe in what I did was the right thing.
Others are not commenting on their case, including the man who propped his feet onto House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's desk and allegedly stole some of her mail. Instead, Richard Barnett, who faces 7 charges, is complaining about jail conditions, including solitary confinement.
You can love me, you can hate me. You can love me and hate what I did. You can not like anything about me. But you have to put that aside, because this isn't about me. This is about our federal prison system in America and what they are doing to people.
Trials have been avoided so far, as defendants have accepted plea bargains, sometimes for a lesser charge. Court observers say hundreds of remaining cases will take years to adjudicate. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News, Washington.
You can read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
Happening now in Asia. The New Year's first tuna auction was held at the Toyosu Fish Market in Tokyo early Wednesday morning. That's where the highest price fish went for $145,484, marking the third straight year the highest bid was lower than the previous year. All the big stories coming your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. In Kazakhstan, locals took to the streets to express their anger with a sharp rise in fuel prices. In response, the country's government has resigned and a state of emergency has been declared. Anna Rice has the story.
The presidential residence in Kazakhstan's largest city, Almaty, engulfed in flames on January 5th during protests against a sudden surge in fuel prices. Protests also broke out in the country's capital, Nur-Sultan, as well as other large cities, sparked by the government's decision to lift a cap on fuel prices that went in place on New Year's Day. That caused the price of fuel to double overnight. On Wednesday, President Kasym Jomart Tokayev dismissed the prime minister in his cabinet and removed former President Nur-Sultan Nazarbayev as leader of the National Security Council. He also promised to crack down on protesters.
This is something quite unexpected. Kazakhstan has been very stable politically and economically to a relative extent since its independence in 1991. What we see today is really unexpected and something quite significant for Kazakhstan and for the region.
According to the Kazakh state media, many of the demonstrators who gathered outside the presidential residence and the Almaty main administration building were carrying clubs and shields. The protests began on Sunday, January 2nd, in Janaozen, and quickly spread.
The protests started in western Kazakhstan, where people tend to rely on this gas more than in other parts of the country. But what's important to note here is that this is the oil field of Kazakhstan. So people are protesting the rise in gas prices in the place where the oil is produced.
President Tokayev is promising to restore gas prices to last year's levels and has declared a 2-week state of emergency in the 2 largest cities, Almaty and capital Nur-Sultan. The order includes an overnight curfew and limited movement into and around the cities.
President Tokayev declared a state of emergency until January 19th. And that means that he really believes that these protests have the potential to do something in the long term. I think that the repression that the government puts on them, obviously the coercive force, will probably quell them for the short term. But I think these issues in the longer term will be much harder to address.
The government, which has strong ties to the Putin government in Russia, is also restricting access to some parts of the internet. Anna Rice, VOA News, Washington.
More than 24,000 people have been evacuated and two children killed in floods on Indonesia's Sumatra Island. Torrential rains have hammered the island for days, causing rivers to burst their banks and sending water levels surging in residential areas. Aceh Province, where the evacuations and deaths have occurred, has seen buildings destroyed by fast-moving floodwaters and agricultural land there damaged. Environmental campaigners blame deforestation to make way for Sumatra's expansive palm oil plantations. Trees act as natural defenses, of course, against floods, slowing the rate at which water runs down hills and into rivers. Making headlines in Asia. Taiwan Air Force jets screamed into the sky for the second day of drills to show Taiwan's battle readiness ahead of the Lunar New Year at the end of the month. Exercises simulated a war scenario showing its combat readiness amid heightened military tensions with China, which claims the island as its own. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Australia saw another week of sharply rising COVID-19 case numbers and hospitalizations plus long lines at testing centers as it battled the rapid spread of the virus in most states. Prime Minister Scott Morrison, who met virtually with the National Cabinet and the leaders of Australia's states and territories, repeated that he will only make available free rapid antigen tests for those with health issues, citing problems obtaining those tests.
There's the United Kingdom, and they're having very significant problems in the supply of those tests. And so that is proving to be very challenging. Singapore is a much smaller country than Australia, as is New Zealand. More broadly across the world, that is not what all the other countries are doing. What we're focused on is ensuring that the tests are there for those who need them for health reasons. So if you need one for health reasons, then those tests are free. And I encourage people to get that message out.
New South Wales, Australia's most populous state, is awaiting millions of those rapid antigen tests. Susan Pearce is the New South Wales Health Deputy Secretary.
We have, as the Premier's noted, as a state, procured millions of RAT tests that will start arriving from the end of next week in particular in larger numbers. It is our intention to distribute those RAT tests to the PCR testing clinics to enable people to access them at that point. The other point to make, though, is that already we've been doing is distributing them to vulnerable groups of people, to homeless, to people in refugee areas, and to Aboriginal medical services as well.
People who have been tested often face long waits for results from overburdened laboratories. India has decided not to add Merck's COVID-19 pill to its national treatment protocol due to known safety concerns that have restricted its use elsewhere. Balram Bhargava is the Director General of the Indian Council of Medical Research.
We have to remember that this drug has major safety concerns. It can cause teratogenicity and what you have mentioned, mutagenicity, and it also can cause cartilage damage and can also be damaging to muscles also. More important, that it has to be contraception will have to be done for 3 months if this drug is given for male and female, because the child born could be problematic with teratogenic influences. So it is not included in the National Task Force treatment.
Merck and the Indian drug maker Dr. Reddy's Laboratories Limited, which plans to launch a generic version of the pill early next week, did not immediately respond to requests for comment. Drugs in the same class as the Merck pill have been linked to birth defects in animal studies. Merck has said similar studies of its drug for longer and at higher doses than used in humans show that it does not cause birth defects or cancer. The annual Grammy Awards show has been postponed indefinitely due to the uncertainty surrounding the Omicron variant of COVID-19. That's according to the Recording Academy and CBS, who gave a statement on Wednesday. Quote, "We look forward to celebrating music's biggest night on a future date, which will be announced soon," end quote. The Music Awards show was set to be held on January 31st. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Jessica Stone in Washington. Enjoy the day.